This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Hello, everybody. It's a great honor to speak at Slot Day. And before I begin, I really want to thank Sina and the great people at Cabinet and Slough for bringing back such great topics and making academia a much more tolerable animal. Thank you. I first discovered Paul Lafargue, Le droit à la paresse, the right to laziness, in the famous bookstore in Paris, La Une, lazily lying next to a host of books celebrating our favorite virtue of the day. Bertram Russell's In Praise of Laziness, Stevenson's An Apology for Idlers, Malevich's Laziness, The Real Truth of Mankind. Of all those books, Paul Lafargue's astonishing 1880s pamphlet, The Right to Laziness, Le Droit à la Paresse, has had the greatest impact. Not the least for being invoked by the erstwhile French Prime Minister Lionel Jospin when he was desperately pushing for the 35-hour work week. 35 hours, to Lafargue, that was absolute anathema. His alternative, a three-hour week workday, no more nor less. Born in Cuba to French and Creole parents, among his many claims of fame is to have married Karl Marx's daughter Laura, with whom he devised a double suicide in 1911. They injected each other with hydrocyanic acid. And other claim to fame is to have Marx disagree with him so bitterly and vehemently that the latter wrote, "Ce qu'il y a de certain, c'est que moi, je ne suis pas un marxiste." I am not a Marxist, if Paul Lafargue is. Lafargue wrote his defense of sloth as a refutation to the 1848 Droit au Travail, the right to work, written into the preamble of the Constitution of the Second Republic. So to Lafargue, work has become a sacrosanct institution to which priests, moralists, economists were surrendering with blindness and abandon. Agreeing with Charles Fourier's brutal critique of work, he balked at the disingenuousness with which a compulsive work ethic was being masqueraded as a healthy appetite, a fundamental human urge that should be inflamed and rewarded. To Lafargue, work was being used as a didactic tool that was slowly eroding the individual's capacity to be contemplative. He quotes Napoleon, who had already figured out that, and I quote Lafargue quoting Napoleon, "The more I make my people work, the less vices they will have. I would be willing to establish that Sundays after church, shops will be reopened and the workers will resume their work." Something that Mussolini also understood when he was so afraid that Saturday evening in Italy would become a site of drinking and bantering that he forced his people to go to the opera. He gave free tickets the way people give parking tickets. They all had to go in order not to be idle. So Lafargue contends that his contemporaries are being dehumanized by their puritanical cogito. I work, therefore I am. They need to be reminded at all cost that the roots of the word travail is trepalium, a sinister instrument of torture. He felt that the perverse shift in connotation of the word had entirely subverted the Enlightenment's philanthropic ideas of work, now drowned by the demeaning 12-hour-a-day labor. Nobody, Lafargue jeers, is above this frightful plague. Peasants and petit bourgeois alike scurry like moles without ever being able to gaze in leisurely fashion at nature. One produces only to produce more. The great twist in Lafargue's critique is his plan to resurrect the forgotten virtues of paresse, of laziness. After all, he reminds his overzealous readers that even God, the God of Genesis, gave his adorers the supreme example of ideal laziness. After 6 days of work, he rested for eternity. Lafargue coaxes his readers. They must proclaim the right to laziness 1,000 times nobler and more sacred than the diseased rights of man, les physiques droits de l'homme. Lafargue is brutal in his condemnation of contemporary working conditions, calling the Protestant ethic of hard work a contagious form of madness. He anticipates Max Weber by drawing a link between the rhetoric of work and of religion. Both pledge redemption while only delivering false promises. But why, and this is the most arresting question in the essay, is work endowed with such an aura? And what real benefits do we expect from work? That is, work carried on to an excess, work that is being performed way beyond its economic use. So he targets Plato and Kant and Adam Smith, and more discreetly his father-in-law Marx, who was still trying to ingratiate himself, for confidently proclaiming that it is work that humanizes us and not leisure. No, sorry, that it is leisure that humanizes us and not work. Who, he asked, is the first person who has made us believe that we can only find fulfillment and humanity through work? By elevating work, Lafargue argues, we have accepted to turn punishment into our highest aim. Lafargue is toying with one of the questions central to Aristotle's ethics. Which activity, indeed, is more humanizing or dehumanizing, work or leisure? Lafargue reminds us that Aristotle looks down at work precisely because it does not nourish our higher faculties. It is leisure that does. Work, as practiced all around him, was becoming an automatic reflex, a conspiracy, a sinister ploy to kill introspection. He's not really far from Schopenhauer's discussion of leisure in The World as Will and Representation. Leisure, Schopenhauer contends, actually terrifies us, which explains why, secretly, so many people hate Sundays. Sunday is a day of wicked, forced restfulness. It fills us with panic, with horror vacui. We do not know what to do with ourselves when we do not work. To denounce work is one thing, but to promote paresse is another. How does Lafargue plan to sell to us his slothful vision? His understanding of laziness is, again, quite similar to Aristotle's notion of leisure, skole. Skole being the time that a free man, as opposed to a slave, devotes to learning something outside of all social ambition or pragmatic goal. It is this type of gratuitous leisure that will best benefit genuine social progress. In contrast, what Lafargue sees and predicts is that his fellow Frenchmen lead a life of compulsion, where even after work activities are transformed into purposeful projects, measured or valued accordingly. Lafargue would agree that the living of life becomes work, like the running of a business with mental records of its productiveness. Lafargue evokes bitterly the famous watermill that the poet Antipatros had predicted would liberate women from menial tasks in ancient Greece. But why did it fail to liberate them? Because, he writes, the blind passion for work, perverted and homicidal, ended up turning the liberating machine into shackles. Its productivity was exactly what impoverished free men. The terrible irony is that instead of being saved by this blessed machine, instead of letting it do its work, the worker, instead of extending his or her repose, multiplies activities as though competing with the machine itself. Oh, he writes, absurd and lethal rivalry. This lust for work has killed some of our most endearing characteristics. Our ability to be gluttons, for example, has vanished, he writes, and I agree. Work has shrunk our gargantuan stomachs. It has debilitated our minds and spirits. We agree on that, so I'm not really telling you who's quoting who here. But it gets worse. The work ethic has turned its victims into unbalanced creatures, traveling on a seesaw-like trajectory, succumbing either to abstinence or to excess. The brainwashed workers in Lafargue's book sacrifice themselves to the ascetic imperative in the hope of a better life, only to injure their chances. And yet they are unwittingly indulging the vices of the upper classes. And how? Because by producing more, writes Lafargue, the worker is giving more shopping options to the society lady, who, I'm not making this up, she writes this, who, because she will buy more, will end up dancing at more balls just to make sure all her gowns get enough wear and tear. Both parties would be much better off resisting the double pull of abstinence and excess. By producing so much at the cost of their lives, workers are encouraging the bourgeois to keep consuming and have begun a deadly cycle. At both ends of the spectrum, the individual has lost his or her relationship to time and to space. The bourgeois, he writes, stuffs himself with truffled mushrooms and naviguer Lafitte. I'm not really sure what if anyone's a wine connoisseur here, maybe they'll know what naviguer wine is. So much wiser to bask in philosophical paresse. That is, to engage in the type of work that only entails enjoying the immediate fruits of one's labor. Lafargue locates in the work ethic the misery of a nation that does not even know what to do with its free time anymore. If the benefits of the machine do not include training the individual to higher and spiritually richer activities, then what is the point of having gained this freedom in the first place? What Lafargue makes clear is that work is becoming an all-powerful deity, and that it ultimately makes for more work. Work has become, as Hannah Arendt will say, its own teleology. Work was to usher the declaration of our independence, but it has become the irrefutable proof that we merely live to satisfy others and not ourselves. He anticipates Irving Goffman, who characterizes our relationship to work as a cat and mouse game, where most of the time, instead of working and being productive, we make work, eager to be giving the impression that we are working very, very hard at this moment. It happens when we pretend to do some work on our computer when we're really doing something else on our computer. Calling to mind the situationist for whom Le Droit à la Paresse, as well as Fourier's Nouveau Monde Amoureux, were intellectual beacons, Lafargue's conception of work fits in a general critique of the quotidian. Its gravest sin being that the work ethic is keeping us from poiesis, from creation. It involves us so thoroughly in a relentlessly repetitive present that we can never hope to transform this present into something else. Lafargue's words of warning are particularly apt today. Life is work. Nothing new about that. But work these days is fooling us into believing that it is not really just work. The screens of our computers and BlackBerries or iPhones are strange hybrids, obsessive-compulsive connecting devices, ever-present reminders that whoever Big Brother is these days, he is now encouraging us to be idle as we work and work as we idle. These little electronic jewels, great fetish objects, have certainly done one thing for us. A bit of suspense in this world of busyness. Rather than encouraging us to find that fruitful Aristotelian contemplation, they have shrunk time. They have killed boredom, stripping idleness of its wonderfully productive anxiety. A long walk is now measured to the beats of a song, and the frustration of waiting for the elevator door to open or close is alleviated by checking text messages. Running, lifting weights, even practicing meditation has become a way to turn idleness into a form of usefulness. How prescient Nietzsche was when he made fun of our fear of idleness. Embracing leisure, according to him, leads to potentially revelatory and lethal self-reflection. And this is why we mindlessly embrace work. Paradoxically, work has become a form of escapism, and the time to rest and to converse has been usurped by the false plenitude of virtual labor. I quote Nietzsche, "The breathless haste with which Americans work is already beginning to infect old Europe." That's where Rumsfeld got it from. So Rumsfeld was reading Nietzsche when we thought he was preparing for war. Even now, Nietzsche continues, one is ashamed of resting. One owes it to one's health. That is what people say when they are caught on an excursion into the country. Tocqueville essentially had noted the same thing. In the United States, he writes, a wealthy man would think of himself in bad repute if he employed his life solely in living. Lafargue lays bare this shame, proclaiming the right to laziness. His words force us to take a brutal look at our curiously puritanical shame vis-à-vis idleness. Like Benjamin, he points to the fact that the work ethic behaves much the same way it did under Calvinism. It breaks up our time. It forces us to surrender to rhythms that are outside of ourselves. Benjamin writes, "Work sought to build a dam to to stem the melting of time into idleness. One such time was frozen in contemplation. Can I read that again? Because I love that quote. Okay. So, work sought to build a dam to stem the melting of time into idleness. One such time was frozen in contemplation. The daunting fear of wasted time, as if time were a commodity that we choose either to waste, to spend, or to save, robs us of a genuinely elastic relationship to the quotidian, making us convert hours and minutes into a highly organized sense of redeemable temporality. To find time for laziness would signify a break from the self-serving world of recognizable accomplishments. It would be the victory of creative chaos, of unpredictability. It seems that planning has taken over our day, says Lafargue, overriding gratuitous moments of being, making obsolete the seemingly evanescent conversations that convert knowledge into self-knowledge. So the curse of work is upon us. And unless we cultivate the rights to laziness, we will turn into the sickly outgrowth of our own relentless productivity. That's me talking. I can't believe I wrote that. Sorry, that was awful. Le droit à la paresse, aimed at the French 19th century working class, resonates with anybody afflicted by the puritanical shame about idleness. Besides providing us with fresh excuses for dozing off in libraries and procrastinating in the remainder section of bookstores, Lafargue demands of us the same lucidity called for Nietzsche in Daybreak. The latter tells us that the work ethic can barely conceal its vicious ends. To police human emotions, to provide a flow of activity so relentless that it finally allows us the dubious freedom not to think. I quote Nietzsche. Work is the best policeman. It keeps everyone in bounds and can mightily hinder the desire for independence. For it uses up an extraordinary amount of nervous energy, which is thus denied to reflection, brooding, dreaming, worrying, loving, and hating. So I thank this blessed day of sloth for allowing us to brood with our guilt, and for giving me the perfect excuse to turn my procrastination into a philosophical virtue. Thank you.